Welcome back to Open Source Underdogs, the podcast where we interview leaders from successful open source software companies and bring their stories to you. Today, my guests are Jamie and Jim Thompson, founders of Netgate, the company behind the popular open source firewall project, pfSense, which has over 1 million installations. Jamie, could you start by telling us a little about Netgate and your journey founding it?
Sure. Netgate is a open source network security company. Both contribute to and utilize open source software and create products from those projects. About me personally, I'm too old. I'm from Oklahoma originally. I was peak woman. There was a peak year for women in computer science, and that was the year I graduated with a degree in computer science. And that was 1984. A long time ago. And I have a master's degree in applied cognition and neuroscience, which is essentially experimental psychology. Worked as a software engineer early in my career. Switched over to doing more of the sales engineering. Worked for Sun Microsystems. I've worked for here in Austin, a company called Tivoli Systems, which was ultimately went public in the 90s and got bought by IBM. And I guess we started Netgate in about 2002 and have been doing it ever since.
So Netgate was originally the name of a firewall that we'd done at the first time we had an open source company called SmallWorks here in Austin. We started with open source. I think my first open source contribution was a port of GNU Emacs to a Convex supercomputer in like 1987. And then from there, I went to Sun, and that's where Jamie and I met, building out their worldwide network, and got pretty involved in network security at that point. I built one of the first set of proxies, you know, around 1989 or so. I did that because we had a need internally. Once we started hooking up all the sales offices and remote facilities to this internal WAN, everybody wanted access to what we now know as the internet. It was really more ARPANET then. So I built a proxy so that people could get out and, you know, fetch the latest version of the X11 system or something like that. And that sort of, you know, I saw that and saw people use it and sort of identified a need for actually being able to build a packet filter for the Sun systems. And that was sort of the origination of the original Netgate packet filter or firewall.
So when we started, Jim came actually up with this packet filtering firewall back in the early 1990s, and it was also open source, but in kind of a different way. When you bought it from us, we gave you the source code so that you could analyze it and make sure that there weren't any backdoors, and you couldn't sell it further on, but you could certainly take it and analyze it internally. And in fact, one of our early customers was Wells Fargo Bank. So we've kind of been dealing with network security and firewalls, and took a detour through wireless for a decade, and have always been interested and involved in network security and how do you create both privacy and security, both for companies and for individuals.
Who are the customers of Netgate today?
Well, it's really interesting. The software is very lightweight on providing any sort of feedback for us. It is open source. You can download it off the internet and run it, and you don't have to sign up for anything. We don't create any, not a paywall, but there's no registration wall to get the software. So we don't always know who it is, unless they are either asking us questions either on the forum or in support, or if they need some professional services, or they want a private port or something like that. So we actually are learning more and more about who the customer base is at this time, but we have everything from individuals who are running it in their home labs, and then those people sometimes will take it into their companies. And we also have a lot of government entities who run it. And then there's actually entire governments that run it, not the United States government, but portions of it actually do. Yeah. So it is used both inside the U.S. and then other government entities around the world. Lots of individuals, yeah. Lots of SMB use it. There are some service providers who also use it. It's also integrated into some other products. So you'll see people who are providing some sort of service, and they use our software either for the transport or for firewalling or that sort of thing.
Is there software that people can buy, or do individuals just download the open source?
Well, both. They actually can download it for free, or we also take that software and we package it onto hardware. So NetGate utilizes the project and creates a product from it, and then the product is packaged either with hardware or in the cloud, and we sell support and services around that. So really how we're...
So part of that is system integration and, you know, product test and release testing, that kind of thing. We test primarily on the things we sell. So there is a lot of system integration. There are, you know, ports to get on new hardware. So we expend the effort to get on some of them and make that experience, you know, really clean and easy. But then we have to maintain that going forward. So we test and release in part just on what we sell. We make a generic version available to anyone. But the actual, if you will, hard work of making sure that things really work has to be done on some hardware platform. And so we tend to focus on what we sell or, you know, cloud platforms, virtualization, that kind of thing.
Do you sell support services?
Not everyone who purchases hardware from us gets a support contract or needs professional services. A lot of people already know how to use the software. It's straightforward enough that they don't need any extra work. So like a lot of other companies out there, we can't sustain the project on just support and services.
There are both large and small customers on the forum. U.S. Army Cyber School, we discovered on Reddit, literally one day. I mean, they were already a customer, and, you know, our user of pfSense, and we didn't know it because we have no way of testing that. So again, it's sort of across the entire range of customer types or, you know, segments of the market, if you will. We only know and work with the people who have approached us. Now, we know the approximate attach rate for people that we sell to versus how many instances of pfSense are turning up in the world. We can measure on a very non-granular scale that we see, you know, more and more IP addresses, if you will, looking for updates or downloading additional functionality via packages and that kind of thing. So we can see an approximation of the size of the installed base on any given month. And we know what we've sold. And, you know, that ratio is about 1 in 20.
Are there some companies who are OEMing the product?
Well, there are companies that have taken it. It is open source, and so they can integrate that into their own product or in the cloud. We have versions of the software available, you know, on the public cloud, so they can utilize it in their businesses or integrate it as part of their own software as a service product offering.
How about channels? Do you mostly sell direct, or do you have any integration partners who help you reach customers?
We have both a set of hardware resellers. So there are people who wanted to be involved with pfSense, and especially in other countries or in other languages, we don't have the ability to speak with them directly. We have ported
done with translation.
Yeah. We've done a whole bunch of language translations. So do you remember how many?
It's like approximately 30.
Yeah, I was thinking 30 as well. So the software runs in these other languages, and obviously we can't speak all of those languages. No one here is that good. So we have in-country partners who can either sell, support, service, and we have both people who are doing straight reselling. We have people who are MSPs or MSSPs. We have people who are buying it direct and then they lease it. So there's all kinds of different models. We also, in terms of channels on the cloud, we do support some of the cloud service providers, people who do the integrations to basically create an entire stack. So if you wanted to move your application or the set of applications that you have as a company into the cloud, you could do that. And the cloud service providers, the partners would help you migrate all of your data and put together your infrastructure and help you monitor and manage it. And our best partners right now are in Europe. Some of them, again, are MSPs or MSSPs, and some of them are, you know, just selling direct or helping people integrate.
What's the value proposition of NetGate?
We are the developers of pfSense primarily. I mean, there are community contributions, but if you actually go out and look at like the list of Git commits and you filter out the ones that, you know, staff here have done, it's, you know, 90% plus NetGate. And so since we're the developer, a lot of people feel safer when they're dealing with the people who actually make the software. And, you know, why wouldn't we give the best possible experience on things we sell?
We employ a lot of engineers. We have people who have commit bits for FreeBSD. We have people who are just fantastically gifted, both in hardware and software. We couldn't do it without the engineering team. They're just fantastic. And it's you know, the kind of thing you can't get from a community, because it's hard to prioritize that open source development over what you're doing in order to be able to be paid so that you can eat and have a house and all those good things. So we actually do employ a huge team of engineers to work on this open source product and do the testing and you know, the architecture, and we run the infrastructure. And
you'd be amazed at how low level we have to go to fix some issues. You're talking about, you know, picosecond timing on an MMC bus, or we've run into situations where, you know, Ethernet PHYs don't have the right choke on them, and so you consume more power in the PHY than you otherwise would. And we've had to actually go back and debug designs we didn't do. So there are literally three people on staff who are double E's, none of them engaged in double E on a day-to-day basis. And a fourth who knows enough about it that he could. He used to design medical devices. So, you know, we have a depth here, a technical depth that some people would find astonishing.
Has open source served as the main distribution channel for NetGate?
Well, principally, it's a licensing structure. It's almost all open source licenses are based in copyright. The ability of the original author or assignee to control that copyright or leverage it. The original, if you will, you know, the GPL turned copyright on its head. That's why some people call it copyleft. It used copyright to enforce the fact that you couldn't control the copying. It's an interesting hack, if you will, in the legal system. We have benefited enormously, as has, you know, Red Hat and a slew of other companies you can name, from, if you will, marketing via these, you know, user groups who they're in control of their own conversation. There's no marketing conversation in the room. It's just sort of, you know, there's all this experimentation, if you will, 10,000 flowers, try, and the successful ones are successful, and then the unsuccessful ones you never heard about. So yeah, we've engaged in that too. And the fact that the software is open source and free has been quite a bit of the actual marketing, where people discover it and use it for their own purposes and introduce it to people who we're never going to hear from unless they approach us directly. It did spread largely through that, if you will, word of mouth or word of forum association of, you know, use pfSense, it's great. And you can still see that going on today. There are hundreds of thousands of people I will never meet who are using software we create.
What is the primary activity of NetGate?
Software development is the primary activity. If you say, what are you as a company? We would say that we're a software company. But in order to leverage that software, in order to be able to actually continue to develop that software, we do need an income stream. We need a revenue stream. And since we are self-funded, we don't have VC, we have had to do that by selling hardware and services and renting it in the cloud. So just like any other company would do. I'd say that our number two activity actually is probably hardware development, which is kind of weird. We have hardware. We work with some of the ODMs, OEMs and ODMs on hardware designs. And so we'll go to them and say, okay, well, we need, you know, an Intel box that has 4+ NICs, you know, an i350 and two i210s. Don't want those i211s. So, like Jim said earlier, we have a lot of hardware depth that you wouldn't expect for a software company. And that really isn't normal. I think, you know, if you look back, we're kind of more of a throwback to the kinds of companies that you had in the 80s, where you would develop both the hardware and the software together and sell the system. So that's what we're doing. We're selling appliances, and we're providing both the software and the hardware that it runs the best on.
Vertically integrated.
Yes. Oh, there you go.
Normally, I would think a hardware company needs a lot of capital. How did you figure out how to vertically integrate and self-fund?
But a lot of credit card debt.
Yes, there's been a lot of credit card debt. That's true. When we started down this path with the hardware, we were taking components that were available, and we were basically integrating those components, and we were doing it on a pretty small scale. And as we were able to convince people that we knew what we were doing in terms of both the software and the hardware and the integration, and we just had some really good, solid products out there that actually stuff that we sold 8 years ago is still in the field running today. And we basically just slowly grew. And when we would reach kind of the limit of that hardware or of the supplier, we had one supplier, we were doing 500 a month, and we're like, okay, we need to go to 600 a month. Well, we can't do that. We can't manufacture that much. Okay, well, so we have to go off and find a different manufacturer. And we've slowly gotten to the point where it's just been a pretty much a continuous ramp to the point now where we can go to some of the larger people in China or Taiwan or wherever they happen to be and say, okay, we'll sign up to this many systems over this period of time. And
we can write large POs at this point and back them with the financial strength of what we've built together over the past decade. But that has taken reinvesting almost everything we've made to continue to make the business grow. So it's we live, sleep, and breathe Netgate while raising a child.
Kind of the more interesting thing is that over time, we were looking at the software, which actually started with Manuel Casper, Monowall, back in the day. And we've improved the software. We've ported it as FreeBSD has changed. We've gone along with that. One of the big things that we've just done is we've also ported to PHP 7.2. So we were running with an older version of PHP, and the current version that'll be coming out here shortly, we've had to update to 7.2 because, of course, software end of lives over a period of time, or it goes to a no support model. And one of the interesting things we did about 4 years ago, is we sat down and we said, if we were going to rewrite this, what would we do? Because the questions that were being asked and the requests that we're getting from the customer base who talked to us are like, it's easy to do one firewall. It's easy for me to sit down in my home lab and control the firewall for my house. But at work, I've got 50 of these things and I have to go control them individually. Do you guys have a GUI? Rather than a GUI, do you have an API? Can we use RESTConf or NetConf? Or basically, as architectures have changed and people's thinking about management has changed, we saw that there really wasn't a way for us to change that software because of the way that it was originally architected. It would be really difficult to put an API in. So while we're also moving pfSense along, we're also thinking in the back of our heads, what do we need to be doing differently? We have actually some new software, and it's also based on open source. It's Linux-based. It's called Tensor, TNSR. And Tensor is really the result of a lot of architecture discussions with the engineering group and looking out to see what other people are doing now in terms of managing their networks and providing security for their networks. So now you're looking at orchestration and automation. A lot of people are looking at, well, how does this run with Kubernetes? How does this run with containers? How do I manage 50 of these things at once? And so not only are we working with pfSense, but we're also working with Tensor. Tensor is really, well, it's available today in the cloud, but it's really trying to kind of solve the next generation of problems around network security.
In those environments, computers and the networks they run on have disappeared inside the machine. There is no box. There's just one box. It's the big box, and you don't even own it or see it. It's in a cloud provider somewhere. It's on Amazon or Google Cloud or Azure or something. You never see it. And you never see the networks around. You just have this sort of remote ability to control it via an API. So there's no blinking lights left. There's nothing left to touch. And so that ends up being a very, very different environment. These Kubernetes environments have messaging rates sometimes that are, 100,000 messages a second. And you have to be able to tell what's happening. So Tensor, which Jamie started talking about, is sort of an in answer to what's starting to occur in network.
How much profit gets reinvested in R&D?
All of it, basically. Yeah. So basically, as we've grown the company and been able to add more people, or we're really lucky in the respect that we took whatever we had and said, okay, what's the next thing that we can do to make ourselves be more useful to our customer base or to be more useful to enterprise? 1 year we added 24/7 support. And suddenly, oh, okay, you guys are real because you do 24/7 support now. Well, we're no more real, you know, the next day than we were the day before. It's just suddenly people felt more comfortable because they can get a hold of us and we can help them walk through their problems. And of course, no firewall problem ever occurs at noon on Monday. It's always midnight on Friday. So going to a 24/7 support model was huge for us. Starting a partner program, worldwide partner program, so we could help support people in country and in language with our partners was another huge bump for us because we're now able to actually answer the questions that people had in a way that was more comfortable for them. As things have changed now to focus more on the cloud and to focus on this automation and orchestration.
What are some of the non-integrator partnerships?
We didn't see a way for us to take the software that we had and move it forward. So we started looking around. We have supported the BSD Foundation in the past. We've also now joined Linux Foundation, and we're big contributors with LFN, with FIDO. We also support Clixon. So not only are we supporting the software that we have written, we're also supporting groups and other software projects where we're either contributing with a monetary contribution or code. So you actually, if you go out and look at FIDO, you'll see that we're in the top 5, maybe even top 3 contributors for VPP, which is the vector packet processing that LFN is doing. So, you know, we're trying to help contribute to the ecosystem, not only the code that we're writing and that we're putting forward, but, you know, trying to help move networking and security along a little bit further in ways that we couldn't do on our own, but we can contribute to it. We can help.
In the same way that we have a community for pfSense, we're part of other communities around some of these constituent technologies. There's even marketing on that side as well. The Linux Foundation markets LFN, and FIDO's VPP is a big part of that. So, you know, we show up at conferences and occasionally talk and participate in various mailing lists and, you know, online conference calls about where should we go next and that kind of thing. So those all tend to count for contribution, making the technology move along, even though that technology ends up in, you know, potentially competitors' products. Like I said, in the same way we have a community of people that we support, we're also constituents in a community of some of these technologies that we take advantage of.
You've avoided raising venture capital. Why?
As with almost any decision, there are pros and cons to that particular decision. The money is what people tend to focus on. Sort of, you know, how do I get this thing bootstrapped and get enough people working on it where I have something? I've been the CTO at 2 companies that combined, I helped raise over $250 million of venture capital over 7 or 8 rounds. One of those companies was in product, and one of those companies was in services. You know, my best advice is, while things are going according to plan, the venture capitalists are here to help, right? And they'll open the Rolodex, they'll introduce you to additional partners, they'll give you some legitimacy into accounts that potentially you couldn't enter. If you can't execute on the plan that you told them about, that's when things can take a turn.
That's when they change the plan.
Well,
sometimes.
You know, VCs are financial engineers. They're there to optimize return for their fund. And so the best advice I have for anyone who's looking at this is to go out and really understand what VC is and how it can help and what the VC's goals are versus what your goals are. And if you can find a way to align those, it can be great. And if those goals aren't aligned, then it's just money. And there are potential other places to make that happen.
If it's something that you can articulate and something that is a physical product, you can always go Kickstarter or crowdfund, or there's all kinds of other ways to do it. But like Jim said, I mean, we've both been involved in companies that have been VC-backed, and we've seen them sling the company around to try to meet whatever the goals are. And so that's actually one of the things that we've talked about occasionally is, okay, are we at the point now where we can't continue to bootstrap it ourselves? Are we at the point where we should take some money and so we can do some additional marketing? And we're real hesitant on that, trying to decide how do we move forward and how do we maintain the spirit and the feeling of the company? How do we maintain our open source roots? Because we're all very focused on security and privacy, and we believe that everybody should be able to have security and privacy if they want. But if a VC makes it, if a VC says, okay, well, now you have to get everybody to register, well, you know, we've got people who don't want to do that.
Any advice for entrepreneurs starting an open source software business?
It's harder than it looks. It can be fun. It can be difficult. But if you have what they call today grit, if you have that ability to stick with your idea and keep going, but yet if someone is able to influence you and you change your mind, help steer you in a new direction, that's great. But it's all on you. And you know, find your passion, but find the thing that's really interesting to you and stick with it.
Businesses survive at the whim of their customers. You know, solving customer problems and providing value to the customer is literally why you have a business. Because without that, nobody's sending money your way unless they feel bad for you. As an entrepreneur, you have to be willing to engage with and talk to your customers and prospects. You have to be willing to take the call that says your code's broken, fix it now. You have to be able to hear rejection when somebody chooses another solution and get up the next morning and go back to work. These things all sound trite, but a lot of people in the computer field entered the computer field because they like working with computers, not other people. They have friends, but population at large can be scary to approach. Because what if they say no? The best thing you can potentially do for yourself as a business or as an entrepreneur is to be willing to interact with the people who think your product is interesting and they'd like to find a way to use it. And they have, you know, potentially other ideas about how it could be used. And you have to be willing to listen. If the number of bright people in a given body of people is, I think Bill Joy famously said, it's the log of the number of people in a group. So the number of smart people in a group is the log of the number of people in a group. And he didn't say what the base was. But it's a sort of, you know, diminishing returns. The larger group you have, the fewer smart people you have per rata basis. But these ideas will clear everywhere. And open source is really one of the answers to the question of how do we adopt other people's ideas? If somebody can have an idea and they can develop an open source project and it flourishes or it doesn't. If it flourishes, it was a great idea, incorporating that into their technology stack. It's the same thing with customers. Some customers will help you focus your product in ways that you weren't going to think of. And so that ability to be open to hear both positive and negative messages about the thing you're doing with your life or that part of your life is really critical.
Jamie and Jim, thank you so much for sharing your insights and best of luck with NetGate.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
That's it for episode 2. Transcription and episode audio can be found on opensourceunderdogs.com. Special thanks to the Linux Journal for co-sponsoring this podcast, to the All Things Open Conference for helping us publicize the launch, music from Broke for Free, Chris Zabriskie, and Lee Rosevier, production assistance from Natalie Lau, operational support from William Lau. Thanks to the staff of NetGate for logistical support. Next week, we'll talk to one of the superstars of open source business, Michael Howard, CEO of MariaDB. Until then, thanks for listening.